When we last left our intrepid podcasters, John and Pete, they were having a discussion about the 2018 Halloween film when tragedy struck. They just really talked way too long, so it had to be cut short. But now they're back for another exciting episode of the So Bad Cast. Without further ado, we present the continuing adventures of these dynamic, daring duos of duopolies and diligence? Why not? Here is Pete and John's discussion of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Because I had John watch another Halloween movie in the series, the only Halloween to not feature. Well, it's not true. Michael Myers is in Halloween 3. He just appears in a commercial for the original Halloween in Halloween 3. So, yes. But he is not the subject. He is not a character in the world and the realm. And so we watched Halloween 3, mm-hmm. a movie that I just, for whatever reason, still have it may just go back to when I first saw it. I don't know. We were talking about this the other night. Yeah, you missed it.
I missed it as a kid. Yep, I missed it as a kid.
Now, were you warded off because you had heard that Michael Myers was not in it?
Yeah, back in the day, Pete and I have talked about this a bit. We watched quite a few of these like older horror movies on HBO. Back in the day, so like
early days of cable.
Yeah, when that movie was available, I think I had heard that it wasn't Michael Myers. And then I'm not going to lie to you, I think it scared me. I think the idea of, because they were showing in the commercial kids, and back then there was like this unwritten rule which they broke again in the latest Halloween, where you don't kill kids, you don't mess with kids, which is what made Children of the Corn so damn scary. Mm-hmm. The idea intimidated me. I thought when I was watching some of the commercials back then that it was a movie about kids wearing masks that then would be, they would be like haunted or, you know, the word's not coming to me just yet, but like they would become
possessed.
Thank you. They'd be possessed by the mask and then turn and then kill their parents. That's what I thought the movie was about. And that scared me in a weird way, different than slasher picks, because I didn't want to have to deal with that concept in general. So I didn't really watch it. I thought I did. I thought I had seen more of it until we watched it, and I'm like, nope.
I don't remember this scene at all.
Yeah, I just watched a couple commercials. So, yeah, we'll dive into this one a little bit, delve into this, and I think because I missed it as a kid, I didn't see it at the time I should have to grab that nostalgic feel of it.
And I think that's important. Well, at least for my standpoint of my enjoyment of this movie, because like same as you, like I try to remember how I was thinking back when I first saw it. And I do remember the first time I saw it, I was in my basement, I was flipping through the channels, and it had to have been on HBO. And I'm sure I was aware of the Halloween movies. They were definitely movies that I was not supposed to be watching because I was like 10, 11 years old.
Right.
And I remember around Halloween when you know, they would start to show the Halloween movies on Halloween night, my cousins would always like go crazy, and they were a little bit older. And so they'd scare the shit out of me and my brother. And so I was like petrified of the Halloween movies before I ever saw them. And so I had like this fear already like deeply embedded in me. And I pretty sure I had seen Halloween 1 and 2 at that point. And like I said, I stumbled upon it on cable one night and I missed the opening scene. But as I was talking to you the other night when we watched it, I think I tuned in at the beginning when they're in the hospital and this guy comes in, he's clutching this mask and he's afraid that they're all coming to kill him. And so that reminded me of Halloween 2, which took place in the hospital. So I remember thinking like, oh, this must be the sequel to Halloween 2. And I was watching and I kept waiting for Michael Myers to show up. And then when he never did, I was just like, what the hell? And so I had the same reaction of, this movie sucks. It's not really Halloween. But as I got older, there's something about it that kept drawing me back to it. And the film itself has kind of taken on a cult status now. It was pretty widely panned when it was released, but now that it has time to kind of grow into its own skin or mask, as it were, it's got like that cult following of people. Cause I mean, it's a weird fucking movie.
You know, and again, it's hard because, you know, all the things you watch and experience factor into how much you like a certain movie or TV show or whatever, because everything's, you know, somewhat rehashed. And to me, it's hard at this age because the whole concept of like these guys in suits that are like, who knows, you know, what organization they're with or whatever else, it just it comes across as very X-Files to me.
Yeah.
But X-Files without any explanation, because X-Files a lot of times has like kind of a cool wrapped in meaning as to why things are happening. And this had none for the most part for me.
Right. Yeah. And it's a pretty slow burn, too. That was one thing because I hadn't seen it in a while.
I thought it was super slow.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah. It takes a while it starts out with some action, but it takes a while for things to really kind of pick up so you have any idea of what the hell's going on. And it never really hits like a huge crescendo. It just kind of, the pulse picks up a little bit, but then it just, you know, does its thing. But,
there's no spoilers in this because it's so old. I mean, I wanted to ask you about this. So the general concept is you have a guy who's like some kind of evil genius, right?
He's a warlock
from
you know, the old Celtic lands. Yeah.
Now, and he's got some kind of energy that he's tapping from Stonehenge, which,
yes.
Again, in 2018, it's tough. Back in the day, I think I would have just kind of let that go. And now he's like,
well, even,
and I will not tell you how I moved Stonehenge here.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, he gives like the throwaway line of like, you wouldn't believe the time we had getting it over here.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. It's like, you know, you knew that they were trying to figure out like how do we explain getting a huge block of Stonehenge to California? And like, well, we'll just have him use that line and
be done. About the guy just has mystical powers and we don't involve Stonehenge? Like, what the fuck? What?
Like, yeah, well, it was interesting because we were talking about it the other night and I was telling because you were asking me, you know, who wrote it and some of the backstory on it. And I'll be really brief because some people listening probably already know this. But, you know, Halloween 3, they wanted John Carpenter and Deborah Hill to kind of keep the thing going, and John Carpenter said, I'll only do it if it doesn't have Michael Myers. They wanted to basically introduce like an anthology, kind of like an X-Files, but in movie form, like every year around Halloween.
You're saying almost like Cloverfield now is doing in a way.
A little bit, yeah, something like that, where like these
universe,
they're all kind of like separate, you know, maybe loosely tied in the universe, but all like separate scary stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so they let him do it. They went ahead and like, okay, well, you can make this movie that you want to make. And so it was an original script. They hired a guy that John Carpenter was a fan of, and he did like, he was a British gentleman whose name is of course going to escape me now, but I think I have it handy.
BG, the British guy.
BG, the old BG, original British guy. There's a guy by the name of Nigel Neal, so that's how you know he's British.
He's the guy on Seinfeld that's dating Elaine, where she's like, pardon, where he just randomly gets the nice suit and goes for job interviews.
Yeah. But this guy, he had written the screenplay to some British sci-fi movies that I think were well regarded in the 60s. Like, I think it was like the Quatermass experiment and a Quatermass or something like that. I have not seen them, but I've heard them come up in reading articles about like some British sci-fi stuff. So anyway, John Carpenter was a fan of this guy. They asked him to write the screenplay, and so that's where you get Stonehenge and the whole warlock thing, but it wasn't really gory or spooky, so of course they had to punch it up. And then I guess when they did some rewrites, Nigel Neal was like, I don't want any part of it, take my name off the screenplay.
Oh shit.
They gave it to Tommy Lee Wallace, who ended up writing, and he got the screenplay credit and directed the movie. Tommy Lee Wallace also worked on the first two Halloweens and was a friend of John Carpenter. So so he came on board and kind of touched up the script. And so that's you know, it was the usual for Hollywood, I think, you know, original idea that someone came in and just reworked and redid. And that's where you got the silver shamrock and the deadly Stonehenge masks that kids' heads.
General spiders. Yeah, general idea of the film is stupendous. It's excellent. I mean, the general concept of some dude is going to punish children because that's scary. You know, back then, yep. Like, don't do anything to the kids.
As a practical joke. Basically.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Because the children will like the children will like the joke.
It's a gas.
Yeah. So you're gonna punish kids by killing them, having this mask that they all want to wear. See, this is not what I thought it was. Again, but it's gonna squeeze. So Pete, it squeezes their faces, and then in a devilish kind of way, like worms and bugs come out of their skulls. To just kind of
basically, yeah, I don't.
To just push the devil.
Not exactly sure how.
It's like the crypt
that happens.
No, and that's the magical part. Like the physical part is.
Oh, it's magical.
You put this mask on, and it's gonna squeeze your head and kill you, and then
you have to be watching the special flashing pumpkin that. If it doesn't cause bugs and snakes to leak out of your skull, will probably cause you an epileptic seizure. So,
right. Which one of the way
they get you one way or the other.
Later, I almost had an epileptic problem. I was like, I got to look away. It was crazy. But I that part of it, I could appreciate. I could appreciate the creepiness of that. We do need to talk a little bit about the main hero, if you will.
Cockering.
It just. But you have this guy, very much 70s, 80s.
All right, doctor. First of all, it's not just this guy. We're talking about American treasure, Tom Atkins, starring as Dr. Chalice here. Atkins, you know.
They got a cool scene.
In the fog. He was in the fog. He was in Escape from New York. This guy is
perfect. He's a decent actor, and there's a cool scene. Pete and I, we even picked up on it watching it this time around, where the only thing that's cool about the scene is it's in a hospital, so you're linking it to Halloween 2, which takes place in a hospital, and you're like, oh, the shit's going to go down, and it's just – it's the X-Files guys going around and killing people, pulling their eyes out and shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very plotting and methodical type killing movie, so it's not it's definitely creepy. And if I could like harken back to my younger days, like it would have scared the shit out of me, because it's got that very blank like, you know, businessman, these guys are all wearing suits, they just go around killing people for what you would think would be no reason, and it's done in a very disgusting way. Like, I got even sick. Pete gave me a heads up, like, you're going to get sick. A couple things are going to be gross. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I really got sick a couple scenes. Like,
made me so sick.
Really bothered me, like, watching. But, like, the hero, is like I think he in a great way, Pete, I give credit to this movie for not creating, but kind of pushing forward the it's not an anti-hero, but he's just the broken hero. Like, he's the hero, but he's such a typical guy.
He's not like the white knight. Mm-mm. I mean, he's all right. So he's an alcoholic.
Right.
He's divorced and he doesn't really, you know, he's easily distracted from spending time with his kids to his ex-wife's like dismay.
And that's giving him the benefit of the doubt, because he's like saying, "Oh, I'm going to be there. I'm going to take care. You know, I'll be there. I'll trick or treat."
And he's like best intentions. Like he's planning, like, actor. "I'll be there Saturday. Yes. I'll be there to take the kids. You don't have to worry about it." And then the second this hot woman comes along whose father has been killed, who's the
and
guy that's in the hospital.
Woman, you mean basically like 19-year-old.
Well, right. Yeah. And Tom Atkins, I don't know how old he was, but like his character looks like he's probably 40. Yeah, he's gotta be about 40.
40 at, you know, looks wise, and she's pushing 21 on a good day.
Yep. And she's coming to find out what happened, you know, because her father's been killed in the hospital. And he's, you know, he's definitely disturbed as to how he has been killed. But he is immediately on board for a road trip with her to Santa Mira, California, to find out what might have happened to her dad, to the point where he's on the payphone with a six pack of Miller High Life. Calling his ex-wife, be like, "I'm sorry, I've got a convention. I've got to be. I don't know when I'm going to be back." And he is booking it to the car, and it's like, "Let's go."
The sad thing is, if you live during that time, part of you is like, "He's got shit he's got to do," and they don't show the six pack right away. So like, you're like, "He's got to do this. He's a doctor, for God's sake."
He does not have a six pack. By the way, he is, you know, again, like, this is not like your chiseled hero. Like,
No. The six pack is an actual six pack of beer. So they show him and he's like, "I got to do this." And if you live through those times, they were so different. You're like, this guy's a doctor. You trust a doctor no matter what he says. And then all of a sudden he's walking away with the fucking real six pack to the car. And I said to Pete, and it's very interesting. It's kind of like this guy is like, you know, what the hell was I going to say? It was like almost like he is like the hero for – oh, no, this is what it is. So funny. It's the best week of his life, followed by the same week is the worst week of his life.
Yeah.
Because the best week is literally like can we say it's his wife? I mean, it seems to be – or ex. It seems to be his wife. I think he's married still.
No, it's his ex-wife.
Is it his ex? Yeah. All right, so he's got...
At the very least, they're separated. It's never... Right. I don't think it's ever specified, but they're not together.
He's got his kids, and you can tell he cares about his kids, but he's putting everything off, so he's screwing that up. But it's like the best week of his life, and the fact that, like, the hot 20-year-old girl's dad was killed in the hospital by one of the X-Files dudes under his watch. Like, nobody's in the hospital. He gets called in. He's half drunk. He goes into the hospital, and then the dude is killed basically while he's there. Nobody else is in the hospital, and it's disgusting. And then,
except for the nurse whose ass he pinches as they're randomly walking down the hall before he goes to
like smack some lady's ass. I mean, Pete and I were like, this took the Me Too movement and just like blew it up. Just because he does this weird thing where it's like, first he puts his arm around her, then he puts his hand down further, and you're like, all right, like, he's just, you know, like, back then, this is what you did. And then he, like, pinches her ass, and you're like, what the fuck? And, like...
And she like, laughs it off.
Yeah,
like,
she thinks it's great. But, and at the time, it works in a way, because that's what...
Oh, because that's, that's...
What's going on. But, like, it what?
Yeah, like, he's not... This is not, you know, this is not a moral upstanding guy. Like, he clearly is trying, but he's... Which, like many human beings, they try and fail at a lot of things at being a better person.
Which killed the hero for me in this movie, because if he's imperfect and the imperfections are like, you know, what's helping the story along, but like he's just an ass and
right. Well,
just there's no hero then.
But it's interesting. I wanted to get your take on this because I was thinking about this after.
I liked his mustache, and I did get a little bit horny.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. So you read my mind. So you got
that's the question.
Yeah. Yeah. You got
another question. Oh, you have another question.
Let me come up with another one off the top of my head. All right. So you've got, you know, Tom Atkins, not, you know, like I said, he's an American treasure character actor. Love this fucking guy.
Why do you call him American treasure?
He is great.
He is. Yeah.
If someone else is playing him in this movie, does his character become like just completely unlikable? Because there's a lot to unlike about him as a person, but you're still like rooting for him because it's Tom Atkins on screen. And it's like, well, there's just something likable about him. Not, you know, and I say that not excusing any of his character's behavior in the movie, but it's like, okay, you're supposed to, I guess, identify with him as a flawed human being that is just like trying to, you know, go on a road trip with a six pack and a 19-year-old and, you know, start banging away in a motel.
I mean, an actor to me that could pull that off, like say in the like early 90s would be like, say that movie was its own thing, like it wasn't a Halloween movie and they wanted to remake it. Like I could see like a Bruce Willis pulling that off because he could hook up with the young chickie and like people just still be like, that's cool, it's Bruce Willis, you know, like it's hard to pull off. And he does. I wouldn't say he remains likable, but you still are. He is. And to use the word riveting is a little bit strong, but he, you know, he's still got the screen presence where you're like, you want to see what he's going to do, you know, scene to scene.
Yes. And it's not like he's just along for the ride. I mean, he is in a sense, but, you know, he's generally disturbed as to what happened to this girl's father. So, you know, he's not like not interested, like he's just there to get laid.
And to be fair, she seduces him and they do give him the one or two lines or moments where he's like, a little hesitant.
Well, he's also like, hesitant after they've like bone zoned like at least three times and she's like ready for more. And he's like, how old are you, Miss Grimsbridge? Like, I think might be something you might want to establish before you fucked three times. But, you know, who am I? I'm not a doctor. So I guess. Nor do I play one on podcast.
Or before they have sex, like this was the one moment where it was a little different than other films. Because again, back then it was just womanizer mentality. But like they had him play the whole like, well, you know, I shouldn't really stay with you in this room. Do you want me to get another room? But meanwhile, they're in the it's one of those like creepy towns where like there's some kind of cultish activity going on. And there's the thing that I found intriguing about this movie, and I mentioned it to Pete when we were watching it, was the multi-layered thing that was going on in this town where you have this cult. The whole town is like run by this cult, if you will, but there's a couple of outliers in the town, so it gives you the sense of like, well, who knows what and what's really going on.
Yeah. And I don't think, I mean, not everyone in the town is part of like, you know, I mean, the Connell Cochran is like the bad guy who runs the mask factory. And essentially he is what makes the town run. But like without him, this town would have dried up like years ago. So everyone in town is kind of beholden to him.
Right. That's a good point.
But he's basically surrounded by what turns out to be like robots that he has created, because he started out like making like novelty, and he collects like these novelty old like mechanical doll pieces and things like that. And but he's come over from Ireland. He's an actual warlock and he has like this plan to
he's an AW.
Kill as many children in America as possible on Halloween, as a practical joke. So, So you've got those layers because the townspeople are like, they seem genuinely behind him with, right. for the most part. There's a few, like there's that one like drunk guy that's, you know, mouthing off, but everyone's just kind of like, oh, well, Mr. Cochran has put Santa Mira on the map.
Yep. Well, so and I was that. Joking around. I was joking around with Pete because, again, I mean, I didn't see this when I was younger. So I absolutely love movies like Hot Fuzz that are also like, you know, derivative of other movies with the town has the greater good in mind. And that's what this town was like. We have the greater good to worry about.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think going back to Tom Atkins' character again, like you're rooting for him because once you find out like what he's up against and what's at stake, it's like, oh, well, shit, you know, someone's got to put a stop to this. And he's really the only one that has the ability to potentially do that. So, you know, almost by default, you have to root for him. But it's more than that. Like, you know, like I said, he is not your Luke Skywalker character that is pure good and, you know, and purely motivated by in his actions. At the end, he kind of is because he understands what's going to happen to his kids and the other children of, you know, of the country. So, you know, the stakes finally, you know, slam home as to exactly what, you know, what needs to happen. So,
but the movie is so slow. It makes like a sloth look like Usain Bolt to me. It's just so damn slow. And to the point where when you get to the one action scene, which is very much reminiscent of like a, like Magnum PI or like a,
yeah,
an A-Team action scene where there's a couple punch outs happening and the main character keeps falling into empty boxes for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Like you're waiting for that to uncover something, like the, you know, one of those empty boxes gonna bust open. The guy just keeps falling into empty boxes. And like that was the scene where I was like, oh, things are picking up. And it was just my gosh, it's so slow. I just, if you know, right now, if Pete and I sat down this evening and had the, you know, the task of, we have a film, it has to be about kids that wear masks and the masks are going to kill them, I just think we could write something way better than that. And again, it's 2018, so I'm not going to sit here and like tear the movie apart like it's current day. But I just, I mean, it's so slow to me. And the things that seem like spooky and cool in an X-Files way or in a Kolchak way, go watch X-Files or Kolchak. That's all I have to say. Like, I didn't get it. I didn't get the warlock thing and the tie to the at this day and age. Like as a kid, it wouldn't have bothered me as much, but this day and age, the tie to the Stonehenge was just, it was just silly. Like I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, it's overall, it's like a really weird movie, and I think part of what gives it its cult status is it's a very nihilistic ending. You know, reminiscent, I mean, I was remarking that there's reminiscent of like the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers where, uh-huh, you know,
he knows.
Tom Atkins finally escapes. He like, uh-huh, dumps a bunch of the buttons that are attached to the back of the masks that get triggered by the screen and cause all the bugs to come out. And he like dumps it on the Stonehenge and
he's trying to tell everybody and he's calling, which was a little silly. He's like calling all these places like the radio or the TV stations and telling
right.
them to
yeah.
Pull
again, the product the of its time. Yeah. He's runs to this gas station after thinking that he's rescued Ellie, the 19-year-old, turns out she's now a robot, so she keeps coming after him in a kind of a silly scene. But
a bionic man kind of scene.
Yeah, totally. And so he's at the gas station and he's calling the TV stations, telling them to get it off the air as some kids are coming in. And, you know, as kids do on Halloween when their parents are pop it into the gas station to fill up. They just kind of run in and get a handful of candy and watch TV. So yeah, he's just like yelling, stop it, stop it, stop it. And of course, like the classic, he turns to the camera and screams, stop it. And that's it. Cause he can't get, you know, they're not turning off the last channel.
No, it's going to happen. So,
yeah, it's happening. And, reading it again after watching it with you the other night, I was like, okay. And so like, I've got like Invasion of the Body Snatchers in my head. And the reason why is that, again, John Carpenter, I think, was a fan of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That was very much a deliberate thing, so much so that Santa Mira, the town in Halloween 3, was named after Santa Mira, which is a fictional town that was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So, again, nice. Like I love those little interconnected tissues to past movies. So that was kind of cool. But
I think it's hard. I think if you again, this is just personal opinion. I think if you're picking up this movie and you've never seen it before, you're probably going to hate it in modern day movie watching.
I would say if you haven't seen it and you're a fan of the genre and you're a big Halloween movie fan, I'd say it's interesting to watch as obviously a complete outlier from every other movie in the series. And like I said, I was surprised myself because I don't remember the last time I've seen it before we watched it the other night. It's probably been a couple of years, but even I was surprised at how slow it was compared to what I remember it being. So, yeah, I mean,
I will honestly say without a doubt, I truly dislike this movie. Like
it's definitely an acquired taste.
I didn't want to see it when I was younger. And then unfortunately, I missed the window. And then when I watched it when I was older, not really almost a thing about it that I liked other than the odd heroism efforts by the doctor in between him boning the 20-year-old.
Yeah. And it does
seem to me,
if there's one thing that I can definitely recommend, it's got a very minimalist heavy synth score, again, from John Carpenter, who did not write or direct this, but he did produce it. And if you want to listen to some like early 80s, like really interesting, like dark wave, like synth, icy synth music, look up on YouTube Chariots of Pumpkins from this movie, and I think you might enjoy it. It's going to kick ass.
Chariots of Fire.
That's the name of the piece.
I know, it's just so damn funny. And he borrows, because I'm such a music nerd, he borrows from his own music from the Michael Myers Halloween. So in the only musical sequence that I really liked was the one we were talking about earlier, where in the early Halloween movies they would have not the main theme, but that just like that just brooding, like two note creepy. And he did it again with this, but he did it with two different notes. That was the only difference. And the other thing that I absolutely loved about this movie, but it has nothing to do with this movie, was there was at least twice when the original movies were on screen.
Yep.
And then there's a brilliant scene in this movie where the original movie is on screen, and instead of using your own soundtrack current to this movie, they just used the original soundtrack and matched it up, and it worked perfect with the scene. It was awesome. Right. I love that.
Yeah, he gets captured. The doctor gets captured, and so Connell Cochrane has got him tied up. And
told about 500 cock ring jokes. That was like the running thing, like the whole movie.
Anyway. I'd repeat them here if I could remember them, but they were really kind of in the moment of just being goofy. So
yeah. Every immature cock ring joke you can come up with, that's what we told.
We pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
So you're welcome, everyone. You're right. The scene, like the doctor's captured. He makes him watch the TV because he puts the mask over his head and you know at 10 o'clock or 9 or whatever is when the flashing pumpkin's supposed to, you know, go bug out literally. And so he's like, enjoy the show before the big giveaway. And so Halloween happens to be on and goes into this soliloquy about what Halloween means to like the old Celtic lands. And as he's like telling the story, you've got the original Halloween music playing mm-hmm. and it's like perfect. It like lines up perfect as he's like giving like this like slightly sinister, like, and the hills where it ran red with blood of children.
Yep. And I mean, you have like an interesting tie-in. So like you could sit here and say to yourself, well, you know, is the whole series exist because of Halloween 3 and what this dude, you know, magically is able to pull off? Like, is he somehow pulling the strings on Michael Myers, you know? And it's just an interesting concept to think about.
Well, isn't that weird though? Because
with this universe, you know.
Well, didn't they like the later shitty sequels? They tried to do it was like a there was like a cult that they had him involved with that just like really got. I mean, I think with the exception of maybe like the fourth one, like all those sequels just ended up being like just a pile of hot garbage. It was.
Yeah, I can't remember four. I was telling Graham the other day, like 4 and 5 and maybe 6. Like I actually get the Halloween movies confused because I enjoyed H2O. And as silly as it was, I really enjoyed the Busta Rhymes movie because it's basically to me. It was like a graphic novel. It was like a comic book. That movie's like a comic book. It's like Michael Myers in a comic book. And let's put him, because at the time it was all the reality TV and, you know, putting the cameras everywhere. And it was just, let's go into Michael Myers' house and film everybody. You know, so it's just right. So silly.
Yes.
And it's not scary.
No, again. But I remember we went to see that in the theater in Boston and we were like, oh, well, this is at least they're trying to do something original.
Right.
We were like impressed that they were trying to something. But and we'll wrap up this episode because we God knows how long we've been talking for again. But I do have to relay the story from that, seeing that, because we were living with this guy called. This guy Dennis called
the doctor.
Which is stories for another day. But the three of us went to go see this in the theater, and Dennis, for lack of a better term, could be forgetful and a little bit absent-minded. So we came back from the movie again, not scary really, but we come back to we were living in a split level house, and the back door was not only unlocked but wide open because Dennis had gone out to take out the trash and just forgot to close the door.
Wind like whipping in through
right.
the back
and this door. This is like October in Massachusetts, so it's chilly and all that, and you know, and that gave us one of those like, what
somebody's
the
in the house now.
Right.
Exactly.
And Dennis is like, yeah, that was me. I took out the trash early. I must have forgot to close the door.
No, you forget to close the door when you're like, you know, you come back in, you go to make yourself a grilled cheese, and then you're like, oh, I forgot to close the door. Not like 4 hours later, after you made dinner, did stuff, went out to a movie, came back, and then the door is still wide open.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not good at all. And as it's probably tied in with how much I enjoyed that film, because as it was not a scary movie, it became scary.
That provided the biggest scare of the night.
Yeah, it became scary at that moment. And that movie actually knew what it was. So it was just fun and silly. And I really enjoyed it. But I need to go and watch. Let's go through this real quick before we end this podcast, because I'm a little confused. You got Halloween. Halloween 2, which is just in the hospital.
Yeah.
Mostly. Halloween 3, which is unrelated. We just talked about Halloween 4, which is a return. You know, you get Michael Myers comes back again.
That was the one that I thought was actually decent. I think when I look back on it now, and I think of how bad some of those masks were, like they just were like horrible. Right. But as far as the overall story, I remember liking that one. I'm like, this is actually pretty good.
It just did its thing in 4, I think.
And that was like when his niece, like he comes after the niece, and then she, they tried to do the whole switch again where she's wearing like the clown mask at the end and shit.
Wasn't 5, was 5 Revenge of Michael Myers, or did I make that up?
I think you're right.
And then was 6 Return?
That was 4. Was 4 was the Return of Michael Myers.
5 is Revenge.
And 6.
6, did we just start getting into those other ones we were talking about, or not just yet? So, I don't know.
No, 6, well, that's when they started to introduce, like, the cult. And was 6 the one where it was supposed to be, like, the last one? I think that's the one when Donald Pleasance died right after the filming of that one. Because, God bless that guy. He kept coming back for the sequels, and I think he did it out of some kind of allegiance to someone that had produced all those movies. Now, obviously, it wasn't John Carpenter at that point, but...
I get confused when we get into there, because you start getting different terms.
All right, so you have Halloween 4, Return of Michael Myers. Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. And then Halloween, not 6, but just Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers.
What? All right, so that was 6, technically.
Yeah, and that was supposed to... That one sucked, and that one, they tried to, like, end it, and then H2O came out a couple years after that.
I like that. Did you like H2O? Do you remember it at all?
Yeah, I didn't love it. I thought it was better than the last couple of sequels, but I didn't love it overall. I mean, it was...
You may have to watch a couple of these again.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it another look. I remember being let down by it.
Okay.
And then Resurrection, that was the Busta Rhymes. That was like the last one until...
Right.
What's his name? Rob Zombie rebooted it.
That doesn't count. That does not even exist. Did he do 2 of them? He did 1 and 2?
Yeah. Yep.
Who gave him the money to do 2 after the shit he did with 1? That's what I want to know. Are you fucking kidding me? I know that
John Carpenter did not like them at all.
It's fucking horrible. They went back in time and like re-explained why he was killing people as a kid. And I'm like, nope. Yeah. You just ruined everything about this character. I don't want to know. The thing that's scary about him is we don't know. That's it. I don't want to know.
I just remember the first one being like, the first half of the movie was let's examine Michael as a young boy and why he turns into what he is. And then the second half of that movie was essentially like a condensed reshoot of the original. Yes.
Yep.
And I'm like, no, sorry. And then I barely remember the second one.
I didn't even.
It was like some weird shit with like a unicorn or some like fucking white horse dream sequence or something. Yeah, that's all I remember from it. So.
Does it enter into the so bad it's good or not even?
It would if Michael Myers was like riding the horse bareback, but I don't think that happens.
Yeah, Rob Zombie made a half a good movie with, what the hell was it?
The House of a Thousand
Corpses. House of a Thousand Corpses is a good half of a movie. And then the follow-up is another, like, third of a decent movie filmed in a different way. And that was it. I'm sorry. Just freaking horrible. I can't believe that anybody gave him the rights to make that movie. Just crazy.
Well, I think that's just the state of like that series was like it really turned into this like a fucking pile of gunk.
It was just done. Yeah, it was done. I mean, you got Laurie Strode. Really, if you're gonna play off somebody going insane, I mean, she's already insane. You know what I mean?
I think that's, I think in a weird way, that's one of the reasons why I thought this new one felt better to me. Just, I haven't seen most of those sequels in a long, long time. But when I think back on them now, like I said, with the exception of the 4th one, which I thought was pretty good, and the 5th one kind of carries it forward, but the slide started to happen like pretty hard after that. I just... they left such a bad taste in my mouth because they tried to explain so much and it got so damn convoluted that I don't even think that the people that wrote the screenplay knew what the hell was going on. So
right.
No one in the audience sure as hell could figure out what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have to, you and I are going to have to give like 4 or 5 and whatever, a couple look-sees and see, you know, what the hell's going on with those nowadays. You know,
we'll train our keen eyes on a relook.
You know, I think when I think the Busta Rhymes and some of the later tongue-in-cheek ones were more like, hey, isn't it funny to go see a slasher pick where a guy kills people in weird different ways? And that's what like Friday the 13th turned mm-hmm. into, like, hey, what are the silly ways we could kill people? That's funny, you know?
Right. What was it that was? What's, do you remember which one? Was it that one where it shows him living like in a sewer, like a cot or something like that? Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
But he's like wearing the mask all the time. Like there was, he never took the mask off.
No, the Busta Rhymes one, I think they find his lair and they think it's set up.
But isn't it in the sewer?
Yeah. And I think they're like, it's set up. But 4 and 5, like you said, I think 4 might be decent. I don't know. I want to watch it now. I'm going to have to see it. So we'll have to check back with you guys after we watch a couple of these other Halloween flicks and see if any of the others hold up. Like I said, I liked H2O, but I think it was silly but fun.
Yeah. And if anyone out there listening has seen these sequels recently or even not recently, and you want to tell us why we're right or wrong for feeling the way we do, why don't you shoot us a tweet at So Badcast and we can get a conversation going because we want to know more. So if you have any insight into some of these later Halloween sequels, let us know. And we'll, we'll talk about it.
Somebody please convince me why this latest movie is a 6-star movie. Like somebody needs to convince me. I'm waiting. Like I was just, you know, a couple things again. Oh, and real quick before we go, that was the show The Voyagers on the TV. When the old, right before the old lady is killed, she's watching The Voyagers. One of my favorite lesser known TV shows that lasted one season before the main star was unfortunately killed on the set of, I don't think it was that show, was it?
I think it was something else. I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, he was like,
I'm surprised that didn't.
It's like a teen heartthrob at the time. Huge actor to be. And very similar to Brandon Lee. I think he was actually shot on set. He held the gun. I think he held the gun to his head, shot himself in the head, what he thought was a blank, and killed himself. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm surprised seeing that didn't give you that extra half star that you needed to bump it up to a 3.
That was that. Yeah.
that got it to 2.5?
There was so many cool nods that I was up to 5.5 stars, so then I needed to dial it back a little bit.
Again, find us on Twitter and see if you can convince John to get him that extra half star. What did you like about the new Halloween that's a half star worthy?
It can't be a 3-star movie. Somebody please tell me why that's a 3-star movie. Please. I want to know. I want to be convinced. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for having us. Whatever that.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us into your ears.
Yes. Don't report us for that, please. And we do. We love us some Laurie Strode, man. She's JLC is the greatest. She's just the best. So the fact that she's in that movie alone, it starts off with 2 stars. There's no way to there's no way to not give it at least 2 stars with her in it.
Next episode, and we promise we won't stay away as long as we did last time, but on our next episode, John's going to break down his 2.5 stars for Halloween 2018, like down to like the, you know, 1/8 of a star for...
1/8 a star at a time. Exactly. Yep. Like 1/8 a star. We're going to go to an eighth of a star for the way the pumpkins were carved, minus an eighth of a star for too many pumpkins on somebody's porch because they don't have that many kids. So, I mean, we're going to, you know, we're really going to get into the nitty gritty at that point.
Bring your abacuses. Is it abacuses? Abacai?
Abacai.
Bring them and follow along as we math the shit out of Halloween.
Yeah, we certainly just ground this into some kind of fucking sausage of minutia that nobody's going to want to listen to anyway.
Steve minutia?
Exactly.
Alrighty.
Okay. Have a good Eve.
And we'll catch you next time on the So Badcast.
We'll chat on you soon.
That's disgusting.
Bye-bye.